Welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, August 18th, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's media partner is Stuff for Sprouts, an indie business that's for sale by owner. Have you ever wanted to own your own bath and body products business? Why not buy an established one and save yourself the startup hassle? Stuff for Sprouts is a one-year-old, critically acclaimed, mom-created line of fun, natural skincare for kids, and it's for sale now. Serious buyers can email info at stuffforsprouts.com. That's stuffforsprouts.com. Sorry, I messed that up too much. Info at stuffforsprouts.com. You can get all the details there. Well, statistics show that over the past several years, with the growth of the internet and the number of indie businesses in the U.S., trademark and copyright application filings have also increased tremendously. And because of these increases, new businesses are finding it increasingly challenging to protect their intellectual property rights or even to establish them in the first place. Chances are you have received or sent out a cease and desist letter yourself, and if you haven't, just wait a while. So in this new global environment, when everyone wants and even needs to own a business of his or her own, what can indies do to protect their intellectual property rights? Joining me today to shed some much-needed light on this subject is intellectual property attorney Christopher Norton. He is an associate with the Washington, D.C. law firm of Aaron Fox, where he focuses on trademark protection issues, including worldwide trademark protection and enforcement, brand rollout, trademark availability, and dispute resolution. Chris received his law degree from the University of California at Los Angeles and his Bachelor of Science in Foreign Service degree from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Leela Barker, a longtime member of the Indie Beauty Network and the owner of Bella Luce, who has had her share of intellectual property challenges and will share with you what she wishes she had known about copyright and trademark before she started her business. We'll take your questions and comments. Do join us, 800-773-0355, or you can email your question to info@indiebusinessradio.com. Welcome to the show, Christopher. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, let's just jump right in this. We're going to be talking about copyrights and trademarks today, specifically, but let's start out broadly, Chris, and ask you if you could first define what intellectual property is.
Intellectual property is it involves creations of the mind, inventions, literary and artistic works, photographs, symbols, names. They are essentially assets that are beyond the brick and mortar assets of a traditional business. So beyond just the property of maintaining your storefront, all of the other aspects that go into maintaining your business, they could include intellectual property, could include the brochures that you create and the advertisements that you create, the slogans, the name of your business, your secret formulas, your customer lists. They're all involved, and they're all encompassed in the broad term intellectual property.
So the property of your intellect, like the creation of your mind, I like the way you said that. And there's lots of varieties of them, as you said, but we're going to be focusing today on copyright and trademark. So let's start with copyright, Chris. Can you define what a copyright is?
Yeah, copyright law protects original works of authorship that have been fixed in tangible means of expression. Now, that's the technical term right from the Copyright Act. What it essentially means is if you've created something that requires some element of creativity, whether it's a story or a photograph or a book, mm-hmm. a song, a sculpture, an architectural work, a dance routine, mm-hmm. something that has required some element of creativity, once you put that on paper or in digital media in some hardbound format, then you receive protection that will prevent others from taking your work and exploiting it and copying it and distributing it to others.
And some other examples, would they include, Chris, things like the content on your website and maybe the pictures that you've taken of your products on your website?
Absolutely, and particularly of relevance to the small business owners. All elements of your website that require some element of creativity you know, the unique text that you have on your website, the photographs that you use, the slogans and the trademarks and the logos, everything in that vein can be entitled to some type of copyright protection. You'll see, especially with small business owners who are kind of launching their own websites, it may be tempting to take a photograph of another product that may be on someone else's website and put it onto your own website. Or, you know, you may have encountered someone else doing that to you.
Uh-huh.
Well, that runs afoul of the copyright infringement laws. And you're basically, when you're creating your own work, you want to make sure that it's protected to the extent possible, that uh-huh. others don't get access to the work and can use the work that you paid good money for.
And Chris, you can file an application to protect a copyright, but some people don't do that. Tell us the difference between owning a copyright with a filing and an official copyright and one that doesn't have that.
The second you put a copyrighted work or an original work on paper, you receive copyright protection. That means that if someone else comes along and actually has access to your work, then you can stop them from displaying it and copying that work. You get extra benefits by registering your copyright with the Copyright Office. It's a very easy form to fill out. You go to copyright.gov, .gov, and they have circulars and brochures and forms that you can fill out to register your copyright with the Trademark Office. The primary benefit of registering your trademark is that it allows you to bring an action in federal court to sue someone for copyright infringement, and that entitles you to certain statutory damages that would not otherwise be available.
So if you don't own the registration through that filing process, do you have any rights that you can enforce?
You have rights, but you're not entitled to bring an action in federal court. The way this plays out is that if you become aware of someone infringing your copyright, you can file your application at that point with the Copyright Office. And as soon as all of the required materials are actually in the office, then that is considered the date of registration. You don't have to wait for the Copyright Office to walk you through the registration process and actually issue a certificate of registration. The only trouble is if you wait to do that, you're not entitled to certain enhanced damages that you would otherwise be entitled to. The general rule is if you get the application on file and then you discover someone who is infringing your work, then you are automatically entitled to what are called statutory damages. Those are damages that are actually written into the statute, and they say if someone has access to your work and they're infringing your copyright, you get that amount of money. You don't have to go through the extra hurdle of proving that you were actually harmed and damaged and prove the amount of profits that you lost to get a monetary remedy, which you would have to do if you did not have that registration before the infringement occurred.
I see. So even before you may get to the point where you may file a lawsuit, Chris, are there some things that you can do if you discover that, let's just say, for example, I go on the Internet this morning and I see that someone has taken a photograph off of my website and put it onto their website? What can I do short of filing a lawsuit against them to get that activity to stop?
Well, luckily, there's something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that makes it very, very easy to have Internet service providers take down copyrighted images from their websites. Internet service providers, and here we're talking Network Solutions and GoDaddy, those types of operations, they will all, on each of their websites, they will list, typically under their legal terms, ways to report copyright violations. And you'll follow their directions, and you typically have to prove that you have a copyright in some way over the image that has been copied. That typically just involves including a copy of the registration certificate from the Copyright Office if you have one. If you don't, then you can include a screenshot from your own website or your own brochure proving that you have copyright rights. And you'll say, this is the date it was published, this is who I am, and this person on this website is violating my copyright, take it down. And as long as it's a legitimate claim, the service provider will typically take it down very quickly.
Now, right. Could, what if they don't?
Well, it could very well be that the person who is using your work is claiming some fair use right to do it. They may be using the image for purposes of criticism or commentary. They may be using it as a teaching material. There are various ways that you can claim that you're justified in what you're doing. Typically, that works with people who aren't making a profit from the image and wouldn't otherwise decrease your market, your ability to make a profit from your own image. But if they don't take the image down, then there are remedies in court. And the trade-off, part of what this act did, it immunized Internet service providers from lawsuits from hosting websites that had copyrighted material as long as, and this was the trade-off, they promised to take them down when notified.
Okay.
If not, then they are susceptible to lawsuits.
And so that usually, I mean, I remember being involved in a situation similar to that one, so that usually works pretty good, right, because the hosting companies don't want to get involved. They don't want to be sued. They don't want to, even if they're not able to be sued, as you just said, they just don't want to be, you know, involved in something where they have some kind of liability for helping someone essentially steal.
Exactly right. Especially when it's a clear case of infringement. They almost always take it down. Now, you may get into more difficult situations with foreign registrars and people around the world in more unregulated countries, but 9.9 times out of 10 here, people have registered their websites with domestic Internet service providers, domestic registrars, and that's not an issue.
Right. So one of the questions I get quite a bit about copyright, Chris, is whether you can copyright a recipe. Can you copyright a recipe for your fantastic handmade soap or sugar scrub?
The short answer is no. You, with a copyright per se, a list of ingredients is typically not protected by copyright because it's not considered a creative work of authorship. To the extent that you've published that recipe in a cookbook and, you know, it has, you know, creative language, you know, describing how you came up with the recipe and, you know, this is my great aunt's recipe from the 30s and you kind of create, you know, colorful expressions around it, or to the extent that that copyright is part of a cookbook in general, you may be entitled to assert some type of copyright rights there. In terms of, you know, secret formulas, let's say you create your new body scrub and you don't want someone else to be able to, you know, copy it, then the real way to protect that is through trade secrets. That is protecting that formula as a secret formula. You don't publish it, you don't share it with others, and to the extent you have to disclose it to your employees or your manufacturers so that they can produce the product that you've come up with, you need some type of contract with them, a non-disclosure agreement. The problem with trade secret litigation and unfair competition actions is that you will have to prove that someone had access to your formula. Mm-hmm. They very well could have come up with the formula themselves.
On their own, right.
On their own. Mm-hmm.
So with respect to copyright, it has to be original. It has to be fixed in a tangible form, like at your website or in your book or in your brochure. Mm-hmm. And you can apply to protect it in a formal way with the Trademark and Copyright Office, but you don't have to in order for the protection to attach.
Exactly right.
That's good. And so then also we can remind everyone that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, as you said, gives them the ability to actually have the hosting company of someone who's infringing online to actually take the infringing material down if the company that stole from you won't do it.
Exactly right. And I will point out that the Copyright Office is much better than a typical government agency. And this is not the DMV here. It is very used to this. It has a lot of information available online. Filing applications is relatively inexpensive. The cost for filing a paper filing, the government filing fee is $45. If you want to file it electronically, which is a relatively new feature, it's only $35. So it's well worth, if something is important to you in terms of the blood, sweat, and tears you put into creating something,
right,
creative work, it's well worth filling out the paperwork and submitting it electronically.
And what if you file a copyright application and get a copyright for your website and then you change it the next day? Does it continue to be protected?
For the most part, if you add any new creative elements that in particular you want to see created, you'll need to update or that is file new applications. The copyright registration will only apply to what you actually created when you submitted that application.
Okay.
So now that's with the registration, but each edition you make, as soon as it's posted, you are automatically entitled to copyright protection just by putting it up. But for that extra protection, and let's say you hired a new photographer and you have all new photographs for your products and you're proud of them and you spend a lot of money, and they go up on your website, you can't rely on the original registration you had, so you would want to go ahead and file a new registration for that.
So it's worth another $35 to do that every year or so.
Absolutely.
We are talking with Christopher Norton, an intellectual property attorney with the Washington, D.C. law firm of Arendt Fox. This is Donna Maria on Indie Business Radio. We're going to come back and talk about trademark issues with Christopher and also with an Indie Beauty Network member, Lila Barker, owner of Bella Luce. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and I'm here this afternoon with Christopher Norton, an associate at the law firm of Arendt Fox, where he focuses on intellectual property issues, and he's just given us an excellent rundown of what any small business needs to consider when it comes to copyright-related issues. Now we are going to turn to another kind of intellectual property, which we touched upon briefly in the first segment. We are going to talk in a little bit more depth about trademark law. And joining Christopher and I for this segment is Indie Beauty Network member Lila Barker. Lila is the owner of Bella Luce, a wonderful spa products company out of South Carolina. Many of you know Lila from her participation in the Indie Beauty Network and also, of course, from her accompanying me and several other Indie Beauty Network members to Capitol Hill and the FDA earlier this month to advocate our position with respect to the FDA Globalization Act of 2008. Lila, of course, was with me at Indies in the City, and we were joined by Christopher, and we all met up there with lots of other Indie Beauty Network members and Indies to talk about issues of interest to the indie business community. And Lila has had her share of intellectual property issues over the years, and she's going to share some of the things that she wishes she had known before she started her business about trademark law and copyright law. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Lila.
Thank you, Donna Maria. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, Lila, you know, you have had some interesting circumstances arise with respect to intellectual property that you've created. And just to back out a little bit, Lila, just give us a little bit of information about, you know, the value that you place on the intellectual property, the kinds of things that Chris mentioned in the first segment. What kind of value do you place on those kinds of items when it comes to your business?
Well, I can tell you that certainly when I was a little greener than I was now and just getting started and getting my feet wet in the industry, I didn't place a lot of value in it all. I just didn't think that that was one of my priorities. I certainly knew that I needed a distinctive name for the company, for products, unique text for my website, but I certainly didn't put the value on it that I think I should have. And that's one of the things that in the last almost 5 years I have certainly come to appreciate is how incredibly important intellectual property matters of all kinds are to the success of your business. It's, the way I put it is it's really kind of the foundation. And if you don't have a strong foundation, everything that you do after that is really built on shaky ground. And Bella Luce has battled on several fronts, but in particular we went through an excruciatingly difficult time over the name Bella Luce. And that's probably a story for another day, but I did not realize when we began this journey how important that was, and we almost lost years of work, and I can't even tell you how much money invested because we almost lost our name. So it certainly is an issue that is, has become more important as we have grown, and I think will continue to be important, and something that I'm really dedicated to helping other indies understand how much value needs to be placed on this one particular area.
Now, Chris, when you deal in your practice with startup businesses, do you find that they sort of share the same kind of similarity with Leela in the sense that when they get started, they're, you know, obviously justifiably concerned about their products and services being up to par, and they just don't think about this issue at first?
That's exactly right. The initial concern is always on getting the right recipe, developing the product, and can I even get someone to sell it? And less attention is put on choosing strong, enforceable new trademarks. And that's generally the case throughout, unfortunately.
So, Chris, how do we, I mean, what are the best ways to really get the word out? I mean, I know Indie Business Radio, I try to do a really good job of it here, but I'm just, you know, and Leela, of course, is, you know, I've talked with her on numerous occasions about other small business owners that she's been able to help just based on her experiences, but how, you know, with the growth of the internet, Chris, and mm-hmm. what I feel is the necessity for everybody to have some kind of additional income outside of a traditional job, you know, everybody's starting a business. Everybody's got a business name. I mean, you can you start a business today and not expect to have a trademark problem or a copyright problem at some point down the road?
Realistically, no. There will be problems. You know, back in the day, there could be a business. You know, Joe's Diner operating in Santa Monica, California, one operating in St. Louis, and one operating in Tampa, and no one, they all sold T-shirts and food and, you know, coffee mugs and things, and no one was they weren't aware of each other, consumers weren't confused. Nowadays, when each of these Joe's Diners decides to put their mark on something that they want to sell, and they load it up on eBay or start their own websites, all of a sudden, they all start learning of each other, and dramatic conflicts can ensue. I don't think there's any greater number of trademark cases, per se. The courts have been full of them, you know, for a long time, but certainly people are becoming more aware of them and having to negotiate, you know, some type of settlement. I should probably give a little bit of background about what a trademark actually is. It's essentially any word, name, symbol, device, et cetera, that is used to distinguish your product and to identify the source of your product versus the product of someone else. So, for example, when you see Bella Luce on Scrubs, you know that they are from Leela's company. You know that if you see Bella Luce on, you know, T-shirts, for example, that hopefully that Leela has authorized a manufacturer to put that mark on T-shirts. You want consumers who see that mark to know their source, and so that when they encounter that mark repeatedly, they are assured of a consistent quality. Now, with the internet and, you know, people becoming aware of each other, there are a lot of cease and desist letters that get thrown around, and infringement actions that get brought, some with merit and some without. But what you can do to reduce that is to choose strong, distinctive trademarks. The more descriptive your trademarks are, the more generic they are. So, for example, you make soap and you want to call it, you know, Good Soap, the less likely it is that you'll be able to protect it and keep others from using similar marks. Bella Luce is actually a very good example of a very distinctive mark. It's creative. It's in a foreign language. The common consumer in the U.S. has no idea what that means. So Leela has the ability to kind of define for consumers what it means and to set a standard. The problem is that, you know, occasionally other people may have the same idea, or they may see her product and think that's a great idea. I want to start a little, you know, something similar over here. And the more successful you are, and Leela is certainly among the most successful small business owners that I know, the more likely it is that you'll attract competitors and cyber squatters and people who want to take advantage of all the hard work you've put into it.
So one of the good things about the Internet, though, right, is that when you are starting a business, you can go onto your favorite search engines, 3 or 4, 10 or 20 of them, however many there are, and you can actually look up the name, search on it, and see if anything comes up. And if something comes up, that's a really good clue to choose another name, right?
Exactly right. Even, you know, just using the Google or Yahoo search engines, you'd be surprised at the number of new brands that I get. You know, we do availability opinions a lot here at the firm, help our clients launch new brands. How often just putting that word into Google will yield, you know, 2 or 3 other companies that are already using the same brand. So that can save a lot of money, just dealing with that before you even talk to a trademark attorney in advance. Another good resource is the Patent and Trademark Office's website. It's at uspto.gov, uspto.gov, and there is a search engine there where you can see, you know, we can input a trademark you may be interested in and see all of the pending applications and registrations that are currently on file, and a lot of times that will help you knock out potential brands you may be considering.
Now, Chris, what if, I know Bella Luce is B-E-L-L-A-L-U-C-C-E. That's the name of Leela's company. It's her website name. It's her brand name. What if I wanted to start a company called Bella Luce Spa and Beauty Products? Now, I hear people talk about this a lot. Well, yeah, somebody's got that name, but I added these 3 or 4 other words to the end of it. Now, I know that every case is unique and you can't answer for everyone, but what are some things that someone who wanted to use Bella Luce Spa and Beauty Products should think about before they're doing that?
Right. It's, you know, actually the same with copyright infringement. People always want to, you know, take someone else's work, and with copyright in particular, I've heard, well, if I take an image and I can just change 10% of that image, and then it will be my own work. Well,
right.
That's not true. With trademarks, they think, oh, I'll add my, you know, my house mark to it, or I'll change the color of the design, and that's all I need to do.
Huh.
What trademark law provides you is protection from third parties using, quote, confusingly similar marks with, quote, related goods and services.
Okay.
So there's some wiggle room and some gray room on both sides. The more similar the trademarks are, the less related the goods and services need to be. Conversely, if you're offering the exact same product, then even less similar trademarks may still be confusingly similar. And the real test is whether consumers encountering those marks would be likely to be confused by encountering those marks in the marketplace. And there are, you know, 9 or 10 different factors that courts will look at, including, you know, who are the target consumers? Are they sophisticated? Would they be encountering, you know, ads for these products in the same places on the internet or the same TV shows? You know, are the goods expensive or not? Or is it something you would just pick up, you know, in the checkout stand versus something that you would have to think about and order? There are a lot of factors that a court would consider.
Now, Chris, are those factors affected at all by the fact that so many businesses are online? I mean, at this point, I wouldn't even care about, you know, that much about what stream of commerce particular goods are in. If I've paid to have somebody optimize my website, I have good search engine terms and things like that, and someone puts my brand name in and other businesses come up, I'm not going to be happy no matter where the other goods are sold.
Right. Not every factor is important in every case. And
okay.
Certainly if someone steals your exact trademark and is offering your same type of goods, okay, and offering it on the Internet just like you do,
right,
then it's very likely that you may have some type of case. So in that case, other factors, including, you know, the actual trade channels and how your products get distributed, may not be that important.
Now, Leela, I know you have been really busy in this area. You have, as Chris said, a really distinctive name, but it's just so appealing, and it sounds so good.
We've certainly had our fair share, and it seemed like early on in the business it was just a lot of borrowing text or photographs, and I think that that's rampant in the industry. Bella Luce is certainly not unique in that situation. As the company has grown, there seems to be more of a concern about the name in particular, and as Christopher said, I'm not sure if that's because people know of us or just really bad coincidence, but it's something we have to be incredibly vigilant about. And in the last months, we've had three separate instances of medical spas or similar manufacturers of similar goods naming themselves Bella Luce, and obviously that's not okay. And I feel terribly rotten when I have to ask someone to stop doing that, because that's just my nature. But at the same time, you kind of have to draw a line in the sand and define what's yours and go through the proper channels with the federal government to secure that. But once you've done that, there's an obligation and a responsibility in order for you to maintain those rights to enforce them. So when you know of an infringer, you have to say, I need you to stop doing A, B, or C. And there's a nice way to go about that. I will go ahead and just say that Christopher Norton is my IP attorney. I'll own that, and I'm constantly going, Christopher, can we make that nice? And I think he gets very frustrated with me because, you know, there's a way to do it, and I'm always, you know, being all hopped up on estrogen. I'm like, let's be nice about it first. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes small things can, I think, as indie business owners and we're all bootstrapping, we can handle individually ourselves, but there have certainly been larger matters where I have to toss that to a competent IP attorney, and not to sing the praises of IP attorneys in general too loudly, but I will say, Donna Maria, that this is something that I've heard at gatherings, on forums, and newsletters. Indie beauty owners, I think some of us are knowledgeable enough to know to search out the USPTO site and to do the Google or Yahoo search or what have you, but this is an area of law that I have found has so many nuances and can be so intricate and complex that sometimes I think I know, even after having dabbled in it for 4 or 5 years and been through cease and desist and lawsuits and all kinds of fun stuff, and I still don't know. And so I think for some aspects of our business, it's easy for us to get, you know, our brother-in-law's cousin who's an attorney to do it or to do it ourselves. But this is really one area where I have found in particular that the value of an IP attorney is priceless. And getting someone that's very specialized in this area, and a lot of the footwork you can do yourself, but I think there becomes a point if you're going to pursue this industry seriously that you have to hand off to someone else and make sure that you understand the law properly.
I'm talking this afternoon with intellectual property attorney Christopher Norton, an associate with the Washington, D.C. law firm of Arent Fox, and we're also joined by Indie Beauty Network member Lila Barker, owner of Bella Luce. If you have a question about copyright or trademark issues, as they're facing you, if they're not facing you, they will be at some point. I hope you'll take a moment to call your question in or email it. The phone number is 800-773-0355, or you can email to info@indiebusinessradio.com. We're going to go to a short break, and we'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Indie Business Radio. We're talking about trademark and copyright law with intellectual property attorney Christopher Norton and Indie Beauty Network member Lila Barker of Bella Luce. Chris, before we took our break, we were talking quite a bit about trademark law. I want to ask a question about copyright. Now, you mentioned earlier in the show that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act can be used by small businesses and just anyone in general to stop people from infringing on their copyright. And Leela, I understand you've had an experience actually doing that on your own. Tell us a little bit about that and how it worked for you.
I have. Well, one of the things I'm not necessarily proud of is my quick temper. And when I started the company, I was a little bit prone to seeing someone benefiting from the hard work that I had put in, and obviously that's frustrating, and I would dash off an email, you know, you're not being very nice, and I think you stink, and you should stop this. And then I got a little bit smarter, which hopefully is the progression of things, and learned about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and the benefits that it affords people who are being infringed upon, and there are a host of benefits, and I love that act. And I have kind of come up with this really easy form letter, which Christopher will probably recommend against in a minute, and that's okay. But I have a little form letter that I'll just send out and say, you know, I've noticed this here, and if you'll notice on my page here. And I try and be very specific and link direct and say, you know, this is owned by me, and I'm copyrighted, and here's my copyright number, and I would really appreciate if you stop. And this is why you need to stop. And then I'll quote certain provisions from the DMCA. And I have found that to be far more effective than the you stink approach in my personal experience. And so that's how I go. Of course, now I've gotten to the point where I just almost always let an IP attorney handle that, especially depending on who it is. But I have had some degree of success. And I think for people who are starting out that can't afford, don't have a tremendous legal budget and can't afford a lot of attorney skills, it certainly is an option. It was for me and worked fairly well to go direct, at least on that first pass. And then if you have someone that won't acquiesce, then, you know, looking at taking it up a notch. But I'm always kind of in favor of keeping things nice and cheap on the front end and then only kind of engaging when you have to.
Chris, is there some place on the Internet where indies can go to see the language of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act? Can you just put that in the search engine and get sort of an overview of how to use it?
You can. If you go to the Copyright Office's own webpage at copyright.gov,
okay,
they have a good description of the DMCA. I should point out that it only applies, unfortunately, to infringements on websites. So if you see someone, you know, with your image on a billboard, it's not going to help you.
Right, and that's why it's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Right. The only thing I would say about people sending out their own cease and desist letters, not only just for copyright, but all types of intellectual property infringement, is that there are some ramifications that you should be aware of before you start sending out the letters. One, it happens from time to time that a letter will go out saying, you're stealing my trademark, and you know, stop using it, or I'm going to sue you. And then, lo and behold, the other party, the recipient of that letter, actually has priority. They started using it first, and so they can just switch the names and letter and mail it back to you, and then you've gotten yourself into trouble. So it's important to make sure that when you're sending out these allegations that you actually have priority and you have the right to enforce that intellectual property. The other point is that when you are sending out a letter directly accusing someone of some type of infringement, be it trademark or copyright, patent, or otherwise, if they don't believe that they are infringing your work, they can actually institute a lawsuit in federal court and seek what's called a declaratory judgment action.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an action saying, these guys have accused me of infringement. I need an order from this court saying that what I'm doing is not infringement. And the last thing you want to happen to you sometimes is to be hauled into a federal court in a jurisdiction of your opponent's choice. It's very expensive, and it may turn out that they have the right. So, you know, with small matters, it may be okay, but it is often a good idea to, you know, seek the consult of an attorney at some point in the process.
Now, Chris, we've been talking about trademark law. I want to ask you about whether there are things to consider from a state perspective when it comes to trademark law. I know states also have their own trademark laws. Is there some overlap there? What should an indie business owner do, you know, in the state of Arkansas, for example? Should they register their trademark in that state and at the federal government level?
Typically, the state registrations are most used by businesses that are only using the mark in that state. The federal trademark register is reserved for marks that are used in what's called interstate commerce. And in this day and age, over the Internet, as long as you have a website and you're shipping all over the state, that qualifies. But it may be that you're only you have a product and you're only selling them, you know, at yard sales or in one little retail store that's very limited. In that case, if you're not selling your goods in interstate commerce, you would probably want to register your trademark with a state trademark office, and that's typically described on the Secretary of State's the state Secretary of State's homepage, and they'll typically give you a form to fill out and mail it in. It's typically a much easier and cheaper process than registering it with the federal register, but you're only getting protection in that state, not
mm-hmm.
beyond.
Mm-hmm. And flipping that question a little bit, Chris, what about global trademark issues? I know, you know, small businesses, we have hundreds of Indie Beauty Network members that are very small companies and indie business owners that I know in all lines of industry that sell overseas. Should you mm-hmm. about registering your trademark in other countries?
Good that you raise this, because especially in the internet age, that is becoming more and more of a problem. The difficulty is that each country has its own trademark laws, and you really need the assistance of an attorney who is knowledgeable with those trademark laws and trademark laws in an international perspective before you start engaging local counsel around the world to file these applications. Unfortunately, and it happens all the time, where there may be someone who has a similar name already registered in a particular country, and that when you start selling your goods in that country, you could be exposed to infringement actions without being aware of it. Protection in the U.S. does not guarantee you protection abroad. Now, the difficulty is that it's often prohibitively expensive to register your trademark around the world or to clear your trademark around the world. If there is a particular country that you're doing a lot of business in, then you could come to me or someone like me. We have contacts in those countries
mm-hmm.
Who could walk you through the process and tell you how much it's going to be to register that trademark in that country. There are unions where you can register your trademarks. The European Union, you could file one application and be protected in all 25 member countries. So it's expensive, but if it's something that you're actively engaged in, it may well be worth it.
Okay, because I would imagine, you know, people start their businesses, you don't necessarily think that you're going to be doing a whole lot of business overseas, but sometimes, you know, business sort of takes you in directions you never anticipated, and you end up doing that.
Exactly right. The other thing you need to think about when you're using your product names abroad is the translation of the product names. It may be that what works well here doesn't work abroad. I'm thinking particularly of the example of, you know, Sierra Mist, the Pepsi soda product. Well,
right.
Mist in German means muck, so Sierra Muck. There's the famous example of the Chevy Nova when sold in Spanish countries. Nova means no-go. I had one client who had a product here and wanted to use it in a brand in Puerto Rico, and that particular word was a slang term for female breasts.
Well,
that may have worked to sell some services. It was not appropriate for the particular product we were trying to sell, so we had to rename specifically for Puerto Rico.
Wow. See, and these are interesting things that, you know, I mean, who knew? Who would ever imagine that it could become this interesting? So businesses can actually help to gauge the degree to which they want to grow, in part based on whether they want to deal with all this trademark stuff abroad.
Right, exactly right.
So it can be part of that business planning process.
Yeah. Another benefit to federal registration is that it protects us from goods coming into the country as well, from people who make products overseas. If you have a trademark registration, you can register that with U.S. Customs. And they will notify you, and they'll stop products coming in at the border that may infringe your trademark.
Well, it gets interestinger and interestinger. and as Leela said earlier, there's all these kinds of nuances that people would not really think about without having the benefit of someone like you. But at Indie Business Radio, we just kind of want to alert people to the issue so they know what questions to ask. And wouldn't you say, Chris, if you know what questions to ask, at least you can educate yourself enough by asking those questions to conclude whether you do need some help or whether it's an issue that you can deal with on your own or try to deal with on your own.
Exactly right. There's a wealth of information online, but sometimes it helps just to pick up the phone and talk to an IP attorney about some of these issues.
Can I say, Donna Maria, that every time I think I have it figured out, I'll try and show off to Mr. Norton because I'm kind of like that, and I'll call him and I go, check it out, Norton, I figured this one out. And I'll tell him, and he'll go, not exactly. And he's always very kind in his not exactlys. But even having dabbled in it for years, I mean, they're just things that I think I've gotten down pat. We were talking at Indies in the City, and I thought I understood something and realized I totally don't understand that thing. So I don't know. I just think IP lawyers are a special kind of smart breed that I don't understand because it's so incredibly complex.
And so much of it is fact-specific, right? I mean, and, you know, a situation that may be similar to another situation may have a totally different outcome or totally different advice based on some small nuance.
Absolutely. And when I started Bella Luce, I knew to Google. I actually knew to go to the USPTO and still thought that I was in the clear and came back 2 years later with a million-dollar federal trademark lawsuit and went, you know, what the hell? I thought I did my homework. And so you really just can't underestimate how intricate and complex it can be. And even if you think you know and can do kind of the basic searches on your own, I'm all for that because you need to conserve your resources. But I do think, like I said, there's a time when you have to pass off and say, this is what I'm thinking and this is the homework that I've done. Can you tell me if I'm on the right track? Because the consequences for not doing that are severe.
Right. Right, and that's such good advice to, you know, get professional help when you need it. Great advice, Chris. You know, it makes me think about what we were talking about earlier about choosing a name for your business. I think about companies like, for example, not to give anybody a plug here, but Verizon. Totally unique name. Who ever heard of that? I remember the first time I saw a commercial for them, I was like, Verizon, what the heck is that? Of course, now it's, you know, they have defined it for us, so we all know what it is. So my question, Chris, is in terms of coming up with a new name for your company or a new name for your branded products, you know, a brand new business, I mean, you can't go wrong, really, by thinking of something that's, like, so totally off the wall, never heard of in the universe before, and using it. I mean, at a minimum, the domain name's going to be available, right?
Right, and you think about the most famous brands in the U.S. or some of the most famous brands now, you know, Google and Yahoo and Amazon and Apple, you know, none of those things, they were either made-up words or they bore no relation to the product sold under them. Apple Computers, for example, or Kodak Camera, these are brands that have stood the test of time and have just gained value. And when you're choosing a new word, you have the ability to create a whole new impression in the minds of consumers who mm-hmm. encounter that brand. The tendency is, though, to pick something that is kind of descriptive because you want people to know what you're selling. So you say, I want, you know, nicesmellingcandles.com. Well, that may help direct people to your site, but you are not creating a brand that's enforceable and that would distinguish your mark from other people.
And I guess one of the things you could do is choose a unique name and then also buy nicesmellingcandles.com and point it to that domain name with your unique name.
Exactly right.
Yeah, there's millions of ways to think about it. I'm just trying to think of, you know, the simple thing. That's a really simple thing that a person can do to be able to use the name they want but not rely on that name in terms of branding and protecting their intellectual property for their company.
And it goes beyond just the company name as well. It's the, you know, different products have different, you know, product names as they come out.
Whole other issue. So you've got an established brand name. We have just a short period of time left. Your company name's established. It has been the name you've put on your products for years. Now you're coming out with a new line of products. Same company, just a new line of branded products. Do you recommend going back to the trademark office and getting that trademarked as well?
Absolutely.
All right.
The question is, if you just want to call the products, you know, strawberry-scented candles or chocolate-scented bath salts,
right,
that's not an issue. That's a generic use. If you want to create something that's more unique than that, then you need to make sure that someone else has not already come up with that idea before you.
Right, and probably a good idea to also buy that domain name, too.
Right.
While you're at it. Well, that's pretty expensive. It's, you know, $8, $9, $10 a year. So we hopefully can all do that. You guys, believe it or not, we are out of town. Time, not out of town. Although I am going out of town tomorrow, but we're out of time for today's Indie Business Radio. Leela, I want to give you an opportunity because I know you recently launched a new line of Bella Luce products. Tell us a little bit about it.
I did. It's called the Arabian Odyssey Collection. It launched last Thursday, the 14th, and it's 8 new products that are inspired by my travels of the last few years to the Middle East. So rosewater, pomegranate oil, fig extract, Dead Sea salts and muds, all kinds of good stuff like that. And we've got new product formats. We've body and linen mist, bar soap, a salt soak, in addition to our normal scrubs, moisturizers, and masks. So it's a really beautiful collection.
You've got to head on over to BellaLuce.com and check it out. And I will say I have used the new soap and the facial mask and the body mask, and they are fantastic. Thank you.
I love you for saying that.
Well, I love you for creating that line of products. Chris, how can we get in touch with you if we want more information about your services?
My email address is norton.christopher@erantfox.com, and our website, erantfox.com, has a lot of information about trademarks, intellectual property, and can hopefully point you in the right direction.
Well, thanks to both of you for sharing your wealth of knowledge and your experience in this really important area of intellectual property. I hope that we have empowered you, Indie Business Radio listeners, to check up on your intellectual property, your copyrights, your trademarks, and really just take a look at things and make some decisions about what you need to do to protect your business for the future. You never know when that copyright, when that picture, when that description, when that book, or when that product line that you've come up with is going to increase in value, and you want to protect it on the front end if you can. So visit the United States Patent and Trademark Office, as Chris suggested, at uspto.com, and also the Copyright Office at copyright.gov, and get busy educating yourself, empowering yourself with the knowledge you need to protect your indie business. This has been a great show. Thank you, Leela. Thank you, Chris, for joining. We'll see you next week right here on Indie Business Radio. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.